a regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Well, we got a lot of legal stuff going on here. In Maine, we have a new lawsuit filed over the 72-hour waiting period that took effect earlier this year. One of the responses to the shootings in Lewiston, Maine last year, even though the individual responsible for those shootings had acquired his guns months before he carried out the attack, lawmakers used that tragedy to push for something, successfully push for something that they'd actually been trying to get in place for a couple of years. Again, this three-day waiting period. Governor Janet Mills allowed the bill to become law without her signature. But now, again, we are seeing the first federal lawsuit filed against that 72-hour waiting period. A group of individuals, would-be gun owners, existing gun owners. You've got several firearm retailers. You've got firearm instructors, all of whom are talking about the impact that this law has had. And it's not just a matter of the businesses that have been impacted, right? The drop in sales. A lot of these FFLs go to gun shows, but people aren't really buying guns at gun shows, at least not to the extent that they did before the waiting period took effect, because they can't take possession of that gun. If you go buy a gun at a gun show on Saturday, you go through the background check, everything's fine, but you still have to wait until Tuesday before you can pick up that gun. Well, the gun show's over. The vendor's gone. And maybe several hours away at that point, right? So you got that, but you also have individuals with a time-sensitive need to purchase a firearm, people who have been the victims of stalkers, domestic abusers, who are told, sorry, you passed a background check, but we can't give you your gun right now. You'll have to come back in a few days. So we've got that covered at BearingArms.com. Also, the possibility of litigation in Washington State, where apparently the state's background check system has been down since November the 1st, and thousands of gun purchases just left in limbo because the background checks haven't been completed. Second Amendment Foundation is taking a look at the possibility of litigating there. And at the Supreme Court, the state of Maryland filed its response brief in Snope versus Brown on Tuesday. This, of course, is the challenge to Maryland's ban on so-called assault weapons and large capacity magazines. The court is scheduled to hear and discuss this case in conference about a month, a month from today, now that I think about it, December 13th. Hopefully, we'll grant cert to Snope versus Brown by the end of the year, and we'll get oral arguments scheduled for sometime in the spring and maybe get a decision by, the end of June. Of course, again, there's no guarantee that the court is going to hear this case. And in fact, the state of Maryland presenting several arguments in their reply brief as to why the Supreme Court should not hear this case. So let's go through some of the state of Maryland's arguments here. They say, first, the Fourth Circuit's decision, which upheld Maryland's ban on so-called assault weapons, is consistent with Heller, Bruin, and Rahimi. Anthony Brown, the Attorney General of Maryland, says, notably absent from the petition for certiorari is any claim of a circuit split. Instead, the petitioners argue that certiorari is necessary largely because, in their view, the Fourth Circuit misapplied Heller and Bruin, and lower courts need further guidance. As explained above, however, the Fourth Circuit straightforwardly determined that the assault weapons that Maryland bans falls outside the protections of the Second Amendment. Alternatively, the court concluded that even if the prohibited weapons fall within the scope of the Second Amendment, Maryland's ban is constitutional because it is consistent with the nation's historical tradition of firearm regulation. These holdings reflect no confusion and do not conflict with any decision of this court. Well, that's a bit of wishful thinking on the part of Anthony Brown, quite frankly, because what the court has said is that prima facie, all bearable arms are protected by the Second Amendment. Now, that doesn't mean that every one of them will ultimately be protected, right? But that means from the starting point, if we're talking about bearable arms that are in common use, yeah, those are protected by the Second Amendment. Now, again, based on Supreme Court precedent, there might be carve-outs, right, for dangerous and unusual weapons. The court has suggested that regulations in response to unprecedented societal concerns may be upheld even if there is no national tradition of regulations in those types of areas. But the court has said nothing to suggest that semi-automatic rifles, any more than semi-automatic handguns, fall outside of the purview of the right to keep and bear arms. In fact, again, all evidence points to the opposite. Again, that arms that are in common use for lawful purposes are protected by the text of the Second Amendment. Anthony Brown goes on to say the Fourth Circuit faithfully followed Heller and Bruin in upholding Maryland's assault weapons ban at step one. Just like the M16, the court reasoned the AR-15 and other covered weapons are, quote, most useful in military service and may be banned consistent with the Second Amendment. Although petitioners claim that this is a major misrepresentation of Heller, there could scarcely be a clearer application of Heller's pronouncement left intact by Bruin regarding M16 rifles and the like. Okay, well, again, the problem, as Justice Stephen McGlynn pointed out in Barnett versus Raoul, in the affiliated cases challenging Illinois' ban on so-called assault weapons in large-capacity magazines just last Friday, AR-15s are not functionally like M16s or machine guns. But McGlynn also said, even if you want to accept that argument, that an AR-15 is like an M16, there is a dual-use exception that the Seventh Circuit has noted, right? Noting that there are sidearms, for example. Beretta pistols, used by the military, but there's also a civilian version. There are shotguns that are used by the military, also, but a civilian version. Now, I suppose the government might contend that, well, those guns, too, could be banned. This semi-automatic handgun falls outside of the scope of the Second Amendment because it's used by the military, even though other semi-automatic handguns that are not used by the military would be protected by the Second Amendment. Does that make any sense to you? Doesn't make any sense to me. So there must be some sort of dual-use exception, right, that the Seventh Circuit has noted. Fourth Circuit, I don't think, has. But that would be one split, by the way, between the Seventh and the Fourth Circuit. State of Maryland also brings up a couple of other arguments. They say that the petitioner's reliance on a purported common use test is misplaced. Now, again, the Supreme Court has said prima facie arms that are in common use for lawful purposes are protected by the Second Amendment. The state of Maryland wants to read that as arms that are actively used for self-defense are the only arms that are protected by the Second Amendment, which is not what the Supreme Court has said. In fact, based on that reasoning, based on that line of, I won't call it logic, because it's illogical, but based on that rationale, there would be all kinds of commonly owned, legally possessed firearms that are not used primarily for self-defense, right? Over-under shotguns, bolt-action hunting rifles, that would be excluded from the Second Amendment's protections? Again, that makes no sense. The Supreme Court has said that self-defense may be the primary reason for the right to keep and bear arms, but it has never suggested that self-defense is the sole reason or the sole lawful purpose for which arms can be used. They have certainly left open the idea that hunting, recreational shooting, competitive shooting, collecting, all of those activities, again, are lawful activities that would be protected by the Second Amendment. Again, they haven't said that explicitly, but their rulings in Heller, Bruin, even Rahimi, and certainly Catano, I would include Catano in there as well, although Anthony Brown didn't mention that case, suggest again that it's not just self-defense, right, that we're talking about. Brown also says that Maryland's assault weapons ban is consistent with the nation's historical tradition of banning exceptionally dangerous weapons that pose heightened risks. Yeah. And to that end, Brown talks about 19th century bans on bowie knives, slingshots, billy clubs, things of that nature. Costas Morris, who's a attorney with Michel & Associates, working, I think at this point, exclusively on Second Amendment litigation. I took a look at Brown's reply brief and said, I'm a broken record on this by now, but Bowie and I full bans were very rare and basically gone by 1900. There were restrictions on concealed carry of Bowie knives and really most weapons in general, but that's way different than a possession ban. If this were a case about carrying AR-15s, the comparison would be more apt, but only barely because, again, open carry was generally allowed. The comparison is also dumb, he says, because the 19th century analog to the AR-15 existed, but it wasn't a Bowie knife. It was repeating rifles, revolvers, which were never banned by any state. Which is a great point. I mean, think about this. Brown says that there's this historical tradition of banning exceptionally dangerous weapons that pose heightened risks. And again, he points to Bowie knives. But what about the repeating rifle? What about the advent of the revolver? Right, where multi-shot firearms came into common use. That was a huge technological change. Arguably a bigger technological change than the shift from, you know, lever-action rifles to semi-automatic rifles. Because at least then you were still talking about multiple rounds being fired, right? Maybe there's a, you could make the argument that the technological shift from a fixed magazine to a detachable magazine was a pretty big development. But I would still say not as big as the shift from a single-shot firearm to a multi-shot firearm. So where are those 19th century bans on revolvers? Where are those 19th century bans on repeating rifles? As Costas Morris says, they're not there. You can't find them in the historical record. Maybe there's an ordinance or two that was in place in the late 1800s, maybe, but certainly no evidence of a long-standing national tradition of prohibiting those firearms. City of Maryland also says that granting cert right now would be premature because the courts of appeals have just begun to consider Bruin's application to the assault weapon bans that are in place around the country. Brown writes, it is likely that the courts of appeals will address the relevant legal and factual issues in the coming years, though. As noted above, at least 10 states, the District of Columbia, and various local jurisdictions ban assault weapons in some respect, and assault weapon bans currently are being challenged in 8 circuits. So he says, why not let those cases play out? See if a circuit split develops. No reason for the court to get involved right now. Again, Costas Morris providing some commentary says, well, if SCOTUS dodges, this may be why. But it would be a very bad excuse to do so. He says that no percolation is likely to happen in any pro-Second Amendment circuits because the states within those circuits don't pass bans on firearms. So only hostile circuits like the 4th, the 7th, the 9th, etc. will hear these cases, not the pro-gun 5th Circuit, 11th Circuit, or 8th Circuit. And while SCOTUS, he says, lets these cases percolate, the anti-2A courts will continue to bastardize Bruin beyond recognition, just as they did Heller. And I think that's absolutely right. They would, in fact, codify this bad argument. In fact, we're already seeing this. We're already seeing various courts, you know, cannibalize each other's decisions to say, oh, well, the Seventh Circuit does this, so yeah, we got to say this too. AR-15s are like machine guns, so they must be banned. They don't fall inside the scope of the Second Amendment. And they'll cite each other to uphold these gun control laws. Now, again, I don't know what the Supreme Court's going to do. I don't think that you or I, frankly, have any particular sway over what the justices decide to do. But we are, again, talking about bans in 10 states and the District of Columbia on the most popular and common rifles in the country today. We are talking about bans on the most common kind of ammunition magazine in the country today. National Shooting Sports Foundation estimates that about three-quarters of a billion, with a B, quote-unquote large-capacity magazines in the country, out of about 1 billion magazines overall. that's common use. I mean, there's no other way around it. There are tens of millions of AR-15s in the hands of lawful gun owners. More AR-15s than Ford F-Series pickup trucks on the road. That's common use, too. The unprecedented societal concerns that supposedly led to the ban? Mass shootings, right? But the FBI says a majority of mass shootings are committed by handguns, individuals holding and using handguns, not rifles. So, again, if that's the unprecedented societal concern that you're citing, does that mean that we could ban handguns? The Supreme Court has already said, no, you can't. A ban on handguns would be unconstitutional. The heinous actions of a handful of individuals should never be used to restrict or infringe the rights of law-abiding citizens. The actions of bad actors should never persuade the courts to strip law-abiding, responsible Americans of their fundamental civil liberties. But that is what is happening in Maryland and in New Jersey and California and Hawaii and the other states that have these bans in place. So again, the Supreme Court now has its briefs to consider. I hope that they'll be taking a look at Judge McGlynn's decision as well when they consider granting cert to Snope versus Brown. And fingers crossed we get a good decision by the end of the year here. All right, let's turn our attention now to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there. Headline from CWB Chicago. I know. I could go to CWB Chicago every day, but I mean, it's because they've got incredible stories like this. Man committed 8 armed robberies in an hour while wearing an ankle monitor for 4 other armed robberies, according to prosecutor. Yeah. First of all, how does somebody get an ankle monitor after they've been convicted of 4 robberies? Well, the answer is that this 19-year-old, Marcel Hale, was apparently charged for those robberies in juvenile court. So, pretty much guaranteed a slap on the wrist at that point. CWB Chicago says that Hale, who's now 19, along with at least one other accomplice, displayed firearms to rob men whose ages range from 23 to 74 years of age last Monday. According to a detention petition, Hale did it while wearing an electronic monitoring bracelet for juvenile court supervision in 6 additional cases, including 4 armed robberies. Hale and his accomplice allegedly took phones and wallets from a 69-year-old man, a 23-year-old man, a 36-year-old man, 28, 49, 57-year-old men, 35-year-old man, 74-year-old man. According to the arrest report, Chicago police identified Hale through photo lineups and, quote, electronic means. I guess the GPS tracking device may have shown that he was there at the scene of these crimes. Doesn't sound like Mr. Hale's the brightest bulb in the chandelier here. If he did commit these armed robberies while on electronic monitoring. But again, idiocy aside, why was this individual out at 19 years of age, 6 felonies to his name, including 4 previous robberies? What was a judge thinking in releasing Hale to the custody of juvenile probation with electronic monitoring? At some point, what do you think is going to happen when you've got a prolific offender like that? All right. Today's Armed Citizen story, also from Chicago. Now, this one's a little unusual. Here's the headline. Armed suspect shot after security guard pistol whipped at South Shore Family Dollar store. Now, the security guard was not the individual who shot the armed suspect, according to police. ABC 7 in Chicago. As the shooting happened just after 7:15 p.m. on Tuesday evening. There were 3 suspects, all wearing a mask or facial coverings anyway, went into the Family Dollar store. One of them took out a gun, pistol whipped an unarmed security guard. Police said that the group was running away when somebody outside of the store shot one of them. A 60-year-old man was one of the suspects. Shot him in the chest. The 60-year-old suspect taken to the University of Chicago Medical Center in critical condition. ABC 7 reports that officers recovered a gun from that individual, and he is in police custody at the hospital. The shooter, along with two other suspects, got away. So apparently the guy who shot the suspected armed robber did not stick around at the scene. Charges are pending, according to police. Detectives still looking for the other three people involved. I don't know if this is going to end up being a defense of others case. Don't know why that individual who shot the suspected armed robber felt the need to shoot. Maybe the guy had pointed a gun at him as he was leaving. We don't really know all of the circumstances here. But we will keep our eyes on this story and bring you more details as they become available. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A man in Georgia who saved a stranger by kicking down his door and running into the home. David McConnell telling Fox 5 in Atlanta that he was taking a nap back on October 29th when a noise from his kitchen woke him up. He said, "I heard some popping and snapping and crackling. Wasn't a bowl of Rice Krispies." But McConnell said he went back to sleep. He just kind of assumed the sound would go away. Didn't realize that it was a fire until the fire alarm went off. Told Fox 5 in Atlanta that he then jumped out of bed, only to discover smoke throughout the interior of his home. He said he couldn't see out my back door or my window. He said it was pretty scary. Tried to make his way out through the front door of the home, but the storm door apparently was locked. Now, meanwhile, outside of the home, Dylan Betts is driving by, just gotten off of work. He's headed back to his house, and he saw the smoke. And he said he went to the front door. Again, that storm door is locked. He said, I ripped it off and then kicked it in. He said he was able to get into the home through a, quote, thick wall of black smoke, yelled out, "Is anybody there?" And he said, "Mr. David luckily heard my voice and he came right to me." Fox 5 asked Dylan Betts, "Why did you do this? Why did you risk your life to maybe save somebody?" Again, didn't even know that somebody was in the house at that point. And Beth said, "Why not? That's America." Well, David McConnell and his family say that Betts is their hero. David even gave Betts tickets to a University of Georgia football game as a thank you for saving his life. Again, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing for a stranger in need, because that's America. Dylan Betts, we thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. Now, coming up on tomorrow's show, we're going to be talking with one of the great folks from Doctors for Responsible Gun Owners, Dr. Robert Young, going to be with us on the program. But I would also encourage you to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day today, keeping you up to date again on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. And if you like what you see, I'd also encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member of Town Hall Media. You get exclusive content, you get an ad-free experience, a ton of other benefits, depending on what tier of support you go to choose with. And you'll also be supporting the independent pro-Second Amendment journalism that we're doing here at Bearing Arms. And that is critically important in this day and age of big tech censorship and rampant anti-gun media bias. So, again, thank you for your support. Look forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.